Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're going to say hello to Eric and Colin in a minute here. We're going to welcome them to the show. We got movies to review here, and we're going to talk about summer blockbusters as well. That's coming up. Only one big movie really opened this week, and that's Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, and we'll find out what the guys thought of that movie as well, and I'll tell you what I thought of it too. And also, there's a smaller movie that came out on video on demand that I believe Eric saw. So we'll talk about that. If you want to jump in at any time, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We're having a little trouble getting a hold of Eric and Colin right now. Something's going on, but we'll figure it out. And yeah, so we're trying to connect with Eric and Colin right now, and we'll see what's happening there. And once we do, we'll start reviewing the new movies. Again, a little bit later on, we're going to talk about summer blockbusters. We'd love to hear from you later. We'll start the conversation with Eric and Colin, you know, about past summer blockbusters, and then we can open up the phone lines and have you guys jump in with your thoughts on that as well. As I was talking with Carl and Lisa just a couple of minutes ago, we were talking about how basically Jaws was the beginning of the summer blockbusters. So, all right, let's see. Can we? Are we all fixed here? Let's see if we can get to Eric and Colin.
Colin, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right, so not much to talk about this week. Only one big movie. But Eric, you saw The Catcher Was a Spy?
Yeah.
Tell me about
that. Well, this is it premiered at Sundance this year, and this it's a true story. Stars Paul Rudd as the baseball player Mo Berg. It's a true story. He was a player for several years. He was sort of a career baseball player, finishing up his career sometime in the 1940s, and not a particularly good baseball player, just a serviceable journeyman, basically. But he found himself, towards the end of his baseball career, actually working for the OSS during World War II. And because of his language skills and kind of an intellect that he was called a professor at times, the OSS felt that he might be a good fit, a good recruit to help them during wartime as a spy. And so he's brought in to do a particular job to possibly assassinate a German physicist, Heisenberg, to see whether or not he was actually on the verge of creating an atomic bomb for Hitler. If he was determined that he was close, he would assassinate him. If he wasn't, he would let him go about his merry way. So, I mean, it's just, you hear baseball player, a real-life baseball player was a spy. You know, that's as fascinating as Chuck Barris working for the CIA. It's just a fascinating opportunity for a movie. And this one was directed by Ben Lewin, who was probably best known for a movie some years ago called The Sessions with John Hawkes and Helen Hunt.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which was a good film, and he's clearly very good at actors. And it just made me, watching this one, kind of wondered what all went wrong with this film. Because as an amazing just subject matter that it actually is, and on top of it, Mo Berg was also believed to be gay, which is kind of alluded to very early on in the film and kind of then kind of just dropped for the, basically the last two-thirds of it. It's just such a dull, as a butter knife affair, and it's just like it. I mean, it's got such a great cast. It's got Paul Giamatti, Guy Pearce, Jeff Daniels, Sienna Miller. It's an incredible cast of people, and nobody can seem to figure out exactly how to tell this story. I mean, the story is it's like 95 minutes long. It doesn't seem, you know, there's enough time to even build up on who this guy was, let alone to craft sort of a interesting true life spy thriller, or at least spy drama. It's just nothing about this film works. Just kind of sitting there going like, surely there's got to be something to this. Surely they're going to draw some sort of connection to who this guy was, to why he made such a good fit for the OSS at the time. You know, they throw in like a World War II battle sequence just to give the film some sort of action quotient to it. Also, Mark Strong plays Heisenberg, you know, just adding to the cast list for this.
Wow.
And I'm just like, the whole time I'm going like, this film needs to be remade like tomorrow. with a better script. Paul Rudd is, you know, everyone is fine in the film, and, you know, it would have been great to see Paul Rudd get a part like this in a movie that could have, you know, kind of expanded upon, you know, his inherent charm. And again, he's about the only thing in this movie that makes it watchable. It's a complete misfire just all around. I was really kind of bored and not taken with it in the slightest.
Wow. All right. That's disappointing.
Very much.
Now, is this is on VOD, right?
I think it is. It's an IFC film release. It was supposed to get a release here in Chicago, and then they actually pulled it from theaters. So it kind of shows you what they think about the movie.
Yeah. Wow, that's disappointing, especially with that cast. Man.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's The Catcher Was a Spy, a very disappointing film. All right. Colin.
Yep.
Tell us about Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Oh, yeah, this little movie.
Yeah.
Not on demand yet.
No.
in the last film, the park was wrecked and closed for business, to say the least. But the dinosaurs are still there, and the island has a volcano on it, and now that's about to erupt, or is erupting. And now there are movements to help save the dinosaurs, but just as many people think nature should just take its course and wipe them out again. But there's a billionaire who used to work for Hammond, the guy played by Richard Attenborough in the original movies, and this guy who is played by James Cromwell and who's bedridden and I believe on the verge of death, or is very sick anyway, wants to get at least one of each dinosaur off the island before the volcano erupts to ensure that they can carry on. And the man in charge of this operation, played by Rafe Spall, you know, seems to be on the level of making this, you know, happen, but he might not be on the level. So Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt are back together in this. And they have two newcomers with them, a dinosaur vet played by Daniela Panetta and a computer expert played by Justice Smith. And you know, the movie goes from the Jurassic Park island of Isla Nublar for the first about third of the movie, and then the rest of the movie takes place at this sort of gothic mansion where James Cromwell lives for the better part of the second half, anyway, after the creatures get transported, and mayhem and some silliness ensues. You know, I say silliness because, you know, there are times when I watch a movie like this and I can sort of forgive this, you know, the shortcomings of the screenplay or the outright ridiculousness or silliness of it and just kind of enjoy the ride anyway. Unfortunately, this is not one of those times. This film was directed by J.A. Bayona, who, you know, did some great films in the past, a few of which have been on my top 10 or top 15 list. So I'm a big fan of this guy, and he does bring some visual flair to this movie that was very much lacking in the first Jurassic World film. So in that respect, it is a better movie, and I do like the volcano stuff at the start of it. But there are just too many moments where I was just kind of smacking my palm against my forehead going, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. The characters aren't any more engaging now than they were before. In fact, the computer expert character, I really wanted him to get eaten first. Every time he opened his mouth, I just like, oh, please, please eat him. But of course he's, you know, one of the good guy characters. So, and you know, there's a, I guess there's a law now that every Jurassic Park movie has to have kids in it. And, this is no exception, but the way the screenplay bends over backwards to make sure that there's a kid in this film is just excruciating and might even be the nuke the fridge moment of this entire franchise. Nothing wrong with the actress. She's fine. Isabella Thurman, that's her first film, and she's very good. But, you know, the way they kind of wedge her into the film is just, I just couldn't believe it. So, and I will say one other positive thing, so I'm not completely negative on it, is that the movie does set itself up for a very intriguing sequel, for, you know, a third one, which has an interesting, could be, you know, the saving grace of this whole thing. But I'm just not on board with this movie. I just was not in suspense. I pretty much know now, like, how every scene where a raptor or something is cornering a character, I pretty much know how it's going to end now. It's going to end one of two ways, and I'm usually right. I'm big no for me on this one.
All right. Okay, we're going to take a break. You guys, hang on. Colin, Eric, hang on a second. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll find out what Eric thought of Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, and what I thought of it. And then we're going to talk about some summer blockbusters from the past that we love. All right, we'll take a quick break here. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio on the 18th floor at 303 East Wacker. It is Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. Jokey time. We're going to talk about summer blockbusters. We'll start that conversation in just a couple of minutes with Eric and Colin, and then talk more about it a little bit later on. Origins of phrases and more fun stuff. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And we're here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Monday morning. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Nothing big to review here. Not a ton of movies to review. Just the one big one, which is Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. And before the break, Colin told us what he thought of it. He didn't like it. Welcome back, Colin.
Thank you.
And welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
Okay. Eric, what'd you think of Jurassic World?
Well, you know, walking into this movie, you know, I've been kind of a two minds of it all summer as looking forward to it. On one hand, I thought Jurassic World was the first movie, or the fourth movie, however you want to look at it, was kind of the low point in the series. And with this one, I was looking forward to it specifically because Jay Bayona was directing it. As Colin mentioned, I'm a big fan of his work, The Orphanage, The Impossible, A Monster Calls. Those are three great films, I believe. And also that, you know, in those films, particularly the last two, Bayona clearly had a very Spielbergian touch, particularly with the, you know, in the human interaction that I thought would carry over very nicely into this movie. Unfortunately for that, he's still stuck with the same characters from the first movie. I mean, I think at the very least they got Chris Pratt to, you know, pret it down a little bit in this film, and he wasn't quite as overtly annoying as he was in the first film. And, you know, they don't really get to do much more with Bryce Dallas Howard other than they've sort of upped her kind of hippie save the earth quotient, or save the dinosaurs in this case. I agree with Colin that the computer expert, I was hoping he would get eaten, and I wasn't crazy about the addition of Daniela Pineda's character either. So all of that being said, then you get to the screenplay, which is still done by Colin Trevorrow and Derek Connolly, who participated in the first movie. Trevorrow directed that one. And the screenplay, you know, it goes in so many different directions that you wish there was a third screenwriter involved to just sort of hone it in a little bit and focus on any one particular aspect, because there are a lot of really potentially fascinating aspects in here. The, you know, the best writing on display is actually the Jeff Goldblum speech that actually, you know, bookends the film. The rest of it, you know, it goes from like a Save the Dinosaur film to, you know, kind of a standard Jurassic film, and then it turns into a really crazy horror film towards the end. And I disagree with Colin as far as the kid is concerned, because I think the kid is kind of actually a major part of what this film wants to be, what it wants to say, and what it's actually trying to set up for the sixth film. So I think that there is something to that kid. I just think that the way it's kind of handled a little bit in the screenplay is a little bit clunky. But all that being said, this is the Jay Bayona show. And I think that the visual flair alone he brings to this film is certainly enough to keep it interesting. And on top of that, the thing that bothered me so much about the last film was that Colin Trevorrow had everything at his disposal to create something really great for a new generation of Jurassic fans. And he played it, he didn't even play it safe. He played it under the level of safe, redid stuff from the first movie, didn't take advantage of opportunities he had to create some really memorable set pieces in that movie, and he basically just blew it all the way through. Bayona doesn't blow it. He takes advantage of opportunities that he has in this movie. Then, you know, going down to, you know, a finale that basically becomes the orphanage with dinosaurs, which is kind of cool. I thought the set pieces in the film worked, particularly the volcano explosion, or that whole set piece, I think, is really well done. The stuff at the end, I think, is really well done. And the dumber the screenplay got, and the more gloriously insane the film got, particularly with a dinosaur auction, I was kind of, you know, threw up my hands. I'm like, okay, I'm going with this. And then Bayona would bring it back and he'd give me some sort of very interesting visual, or something that was going on with his cabin in the woods like finale that I think works pretty well. I just kind of, you know, I gave into it. I think it's a marked improvement over the last film. I hope they give Bayona the next movie, and give him some better screenwriters, because, I don't want to just hack on Trevorrow all the time, but he is the problem so far with these last two movies. I'd like to see what Bayona could do with something that he would write for the next Jurassic movie, and I'm going to give it with that, and I'm going to recommend Fallen Kingdom.
Wow. I thought this movie was great. I don't know. In fact, it may be my favorite Jurassic Park movie of all of them.
That's crazy.
Well, I'm not a big fan of the first one.
I know.
My favorite, if I had to choose one, would be Lost World. Would be the second one, which is, I think, you know. But this one, I was on board from the get go, man. And it was nice of Jeff Goldblum to probably show up for 15 minutes on set. I mean, it's like, what? He probably walked on set and went, okay, let's do this, and then left like 10 minutes later.
Basically give the same speech as he's been giving throughout all these movies anyway.
Yeah, but the funny thing is that, you know, for those people who have not seen this Jurassic World chapter, and you've seen the commercials, you've seen all of Jeff Goldblum's scenes.
Pretty much.
No, I had a blast during this movie. I think it's beautifully made, and I think, as you were saying, Eric, it gets crazier and crazier. The little subplot involving the girl, involving the little girl, and what that turns out to be is is completely crazy. And I was like, what? And that adds to it. I mean, I'm not as down on Chris Pratt as you are, Eric. And I mean, I think he's fine. He's charming. He does lay low a little bit in this one more than in the last one. But there are sequences that, I mean, that, you know, you talk about the volcano sequence, that that whole volcano sequence leading up to that the whole volcano sequence leading up to that, you know, to that, the submerged ball in the water. That's phenomenal stuff. I mean, really, really well done and beautiful long takes. Wonderful use of special effects and editing. The whole volcano island part at the beginning of the movie, I think, is really strong. I also love that there are 9,000 bad guys in this movie. Like, you know, you go from Ted Levine, you got Ted Levine, you got Toby Jones. I mean, there's like everybody is, there's like 27 bad guys in this movie. And luckily, a lot of them getting eaten in quality ways. Like, they get chewed on real good. I mean, particularly, well, I don't want to give anything away, but there's a scene in a cage that I thought was fantastic. And I thought the dinosaur effects were great. And I thought it, and I love the fact that it got all weird. Like the last, you know, like you're right. I mean, it's like a gothic horror movie. Like the last, you know, third of the movie, or even more than that. Like the second half of the film. So all the adventure stuff is there at the beginning, you know, where they rescue the dinosaurs. They're trying to get the dinosaurs back. And then there's a weird plot thickening, and the bad guys become badder. And, you know, it's just, and it's a silly-ass movie. But I think they're all silly, quite frankly. But I'm not even questioning that. I was on board throughout the entire thing. I didn't hate the computer geek character, although it would have been nice if he was eaten. So I didn't have objections to that. I just thought all the action pieces and all the scary set pieces in the last part of the movie all worked. And I thought the dinosaurs were cool. And I thought, you know, that, like you mentioned, that dinosaur auction sequence is fantastic. And there's, you know, a dinosaur that is used for, you know, because he just bumps things with his head. I laughed every time that happened. Particularly during the auction scene. I think it's a beautifully crafted movie, like really well. This guy's a great filmmaker. And yeah, I mean, it's not a great screenplay. It's exceedingly silly. And the twist with the little girl is insane. But I was on board throughout this entire thing. I just thought it was flat out entertaining. It's exactly the kind of movie that I wanted to see. Lots of people get eaten by dinosaurs. Lots of dinosaurs are cool, and they break stuff. And stuff blows up. And they also stalk you, and they're scary. So, I just thought this was great. I mean, I really did. I had a blast. And so I'm highly recommending.
And, you know, it'll never happen, but even by the end, you mentioned that cage sequence at the end. That's I was thinking to myself, like, God, I wish this was R-rated.
Yeah.
You know, it'll never happen with this series.
Yeah.
But it just, by the time the dinosaurs just start going crazy at the end of the movie, you just really wish that there was just blood flying everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, people get eaten, but basically, you know, when people get chomped on by dinosaurs, which is that's the whole reason I go to these movies. I go to these movies because I want to see people get eaten by dinosaurs. And there are some quality kills in this. But if that were really happening, there'd be blood sprayed everywhere.
Yeah.
You know? But anyway, I thought it was great, and I'm highly recommending it. So I know I'm in the minority on this one, but I had a blast. So
not necessarily.
I'm sorry?
No, I like it.
I said not necessarily. I mean, it kind of makes sense that we're all over the place on this, because I think it has like a 50% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. All right.
All right.
This is kind of a little microcosm of that.
Okay, cool. All right, you guys hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, hang on. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back afterwards, we're going to talk about past summer blockbusters that are our favorites. Jurassic World is the only big movie to be released this week. Colin didn't like it, Eric liked it, and I loved it. So there you go. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with more after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18th floor, 303 East Wacker. Monday morning, my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, and we've got more fun stuff to talk about, origins of phrases and things like that. It is the Monday morning movie reviews. We only had one big movie to review, the Jurassic World sequel. And we'll talk about that. But it is summertime, and we wanted to talk about summer blockbusters from the past. So we're going to talk a little bit about that with Colin and Eric. And then Eric and I will bat around the box office as well. And let's bring him back. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. So let's talk about some of our favorite summer blockbusters. So, you know, if you go back in time, I guess it all begins with Jaws. Like the original, you know, summer blockbuster, and then it was cemented by Star Wars 2 years later as being, you know, the time to release your big, you know, tentpole, you know, adventure movies, the summer quote unquote fair. So would that be correct, tracing it back to Jaws?
Almost definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, and then like I said, 2 years later, Star Wars, and that was it. That was summertime movies. Now, Eric, let's start with you. What are some of your favorites? I mean, obviously, we mentioned Jaws and Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, those are clearly obvious ones. I mean, for me, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, something like E.T. Mm-hmm. is obviously a very seminal movie in my life, and that was the summer of '82.
Right.
'84 was kind of a really big summer for me, because that was when I started kind of like actively going to the theaters and, you know, like being aware of things that were coming out. So that was the summer of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yeah.
That was the summer of Ghostbusters and Gremlins.
Yeah.
You know, those three movies alone, you know, wasn't enough for any summer. And for any year, and we got that in one summer, and so that, you know, really kind of changed everything. And obviously the movie that I was watching again tonight, Back to the Future 1985, mm-hmm. is my favorite movie of all time. So, you know, that's, you know, kind of where the building blocks began for me.
Yeah. Those are all, you know, classics. And in 84, we also had Purple Rain, which was a no, it was a big movie, man. Yeah. I mean, it was big.
Maybe for some people.
No, it was. I mean, for
not
me,
for me.
It's a terrible movie, but it was. It's Prince, so for me, it was a big deal. But you know, that movie has not aged well. I mean, the music has. The music's fantastic, but boof, wow.
Yeah.
All right, Colin, what about you? What are some of your favorites?
Well, you know, Eric has been doing this thing on his podcast where he's asking other critics to talk about, you know, their best, you know, their favorite summer year. And I chose summer of 1988. Mm. I think that's a phenomenal summer because it was, first of all, a great rated R summer because you had Die Hard, Midnight Run, Fish Called Wanda, Bull Durham, and Clean and Sober. And then on top of that, you have, you know, Roger Rabbit, Big, and Funny Farm. I mean, I think that's a great lineup of movies there. You know, whether or not you call them blockbusters or not, they were all big hits. Well, most of them were hits. And, you know, still, you know, I can still watch these things today and be like, wow, man, that's a solid year right there. That's a solid, like, 3 months of great movies right there.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good. I mean, it was a good year for me. That summer is the summer of Roger Rabbit. I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah. Those are all really strong. I'm trying to remember what big ones came out in '89. I know that Do the Right Thing came out in '89. The sequel to Ghostbusters. Ugh.
A little thing called Batman.
Batman. Oh yeah, that was the summer of Batman. I mean, that was
Lethal
that was,
Weapon 2. Mm-hmm. Indiana Jones. Yeah.
Oh, Last Crusade, right. Yeah. I always forget that one. I don't know why.
It was the big Soderbergh coming out party with Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, little things like that. Not a blockbuster, I know, but.
How about some of the more recent ones, Eric? What are some of your favorites in the past few years?
Oh, gosh. Dunkirk, mm-hmm. obviously. You know, being run down the entire Nolan filmography. I mean, Inception, for God's sakes.
All of his movies come out in the summer?
Except for Interstellar.
Interstellar.
I mean, The Prestige. I mean, all the Batman movies came out over the summer.
Right.
Insomnia came out in the summer of 2002. Yeah, so it's basically like it's Interstellar and, I guess, Memento and The Prestige.
Right. Yeah, Interstellar was a November release, if I remember correctly.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what about Colin? What about you? What are some of the other ones that stick out for you?
Well, I mean, summer of 2015, we had Mad Max: Fury Road and mm-hmm. Inside Out. I mean, that was number one and number two on my top 10 list that year.
Me too.
And you know, it's like Pixar's second best movie. If someone were to say it was their best, I wouldn't argue. And then, you know, my God, Fury Road, for God's sake.
Yeah.
So that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, Fury Road remains the only movie that I saw three times in 24 hours. And in the theater, I saw it three times mm-hmm. in 24 hours. I don't think that's a record that will be broken soon. But yeah, that was good. And so far this summer, what do you guys make, Eric? What do you make of this summer so far?
Not great. Not having all the movies in front of me, but you know, this month has been pretty good, actually. You know, not just for big movies, but for small movies too. I mean, this is the month of Hereditary.
Yeah.
For Pete's sake. What else? This
Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Will You Be My Neighbor? The Incredibles 2. Yeah, obviously. I mean, that's my second favorite film this month. I wasn't crazy about a lot of stuff. I mean, I like Solo and Deadpool 2 from May. Not as crazy about Infinity War as most people apparently.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this month has been, you know, relatively good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in the minority. I enjoyed Ocean's 8 as well. And I was a big fan of Solo, even though that came out in May, but I was a big fan of that movie. So, yeah. All right. And Jurassic World just kicked off. And then next week, We got Sicario, and what else is next week?
Uncle Drew.
Uncle Drew. Uncle Drew. Is that it? I mean, because, yeah.
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 Well, as far as big movies are concerned.
Right. And then for the fourth, we got Purge and then Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Ant-Man comes out on the 6th. The first Purge
yeah.
comes out on July 4th.
And,
Happy Independence Day, everyone.
Yeah, that's right. And evidently, Marissa Tomei lost a bet. No idea. Oh, my God.
I still have yet to see any of these Purge movies.
You're
Colin, I gotcha. Just don't. I'll go. Yeah,
no, it's okay, man.
don't do it.
You're not missing anything. You're not missing anything.
Okay.
All right. Well,
that's
Colin, thanks, man. We'll talk to you next week.
No problem. Thank you.
And there you go. And Eric, you hang on, okay?
Sure thing.
All right. There you go. We're going to take a quick break for the news. And when we come back, we will jump right into the box office as well right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here on the 18th floor, 303 Wacker, our new home. And it's Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We reviewed the new movies, basically just one, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. But now we're going to talk box office. Eric Childress sticks around for that, and let's welcome Eric back to the show. Welcome back.
Hey, you.
All right, so obviously Jurassic World was number one, and $150 million. That's about what you predicted, correct?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was figuring. I knew it wasn't going to have. I didn't figure it was going to have as big an opening as the last one, particularly with the Incredibles 2 currently out there eating up a lot of dollars as well. But you know, I mean, $150 million. You think about that, and then when I say that it's only the 20th highest opening weekend of all time, that sounds very insane.
Yeah,
that you know that we could even think that $150 million opening weekend is somehow low on the charts.
Yeah,
but when you think about it this way, that 17 of the 19 films that are above it had a higher than $150 million opening are all within the last 10 years.
Mm.
So like the two highest openings before that, the only two movies to open over 150 before 2008, really, or before 2009 actually, were The Dark Knight and Spider-Man 3.
Wow.
So everything else has been within the last 10 years.
Wow. Okay. All right. And I will say this, you know, we saw it Saturday afternoon, Jurassic World, and the theater was packed. And I'm not just talking about for Jurassic World. There were kids everywhere, like The Incredibles. Mm-hmm. The Incredibles 2, you know, and this were playing it, you know, in the same multiplex.
Yeah,
and there were a lot of humans there. That's all. That's all I'm saying, man.
Yeah,
Incredibles 2 made almost $81 million over the weekend. That's still really, really strong, right?
Yeah, it's stronger than people might even realize. I mean, it's up to $350 million right now. That's the seventh highest 10-day total in film history.
Wow.
Yeah, there are only six movies that had a higher total on their 10th day than The Incredibles 2. And we're talking Force Awakens, Avengers Infinity War, Black Panther, the first Jurassic World, The Avengers, and The Last Jedi.
Wow.
Yeah, the incredible, and the thing that all of those movies have in common is that they all made over $600 million.
So this is heading in that direction, obviously.
It is headed in that direction. At the very least, it is headed probably for no less than the ninth highest grossing movie of all time.
Man, oh man.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
These numbers are huge.
Yeah. No, yeah. And how's it doing worldwide? Really well?
It hasn't opened wide.
Oh, okay.
The American grosses are outshattering them big time. But it is close to $500 million worldwide right now.
Oh,
so it is going to approach over $1 billion by the time this is done.
Wow, man, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Number three, Ocean's 8 with $11.6 million. It's up. It broke the $100,000 barrier, which is what they expected. Correct?
Yeah. Finally hit the $100 million mark. It's doing pretty well overseas. So it looks like this one is probably going to be somewhere north of $200 million worldwide, which is enough to cover its budget. It's not a huge victory, but it's certainly enough to greenlight Ocean's 9.
Okay. All right. Tag is number four with $8.2 million. Its total is about $30 million. That's underperforming a little?
I'd say it's performing right where we kind of expected it to perform.
Yeah.
It's a $28 million budget, so it's covered its production budget. Well, not, it technically hasn't covered its production budget. Yeah, it needs to be about 56 to cover that.
Jeez.
So this one's looking like a loser right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Number five, Deadpool 2, 5.2 million. That's still killing.
Oh, yeah. This is over 700 million worldwide, 300 million, 304 million domestic. Probably going to end up somewhere around 315, 320 probably by the time it's over. So, yeah. So you're going to see a Deadpool 3.
Okay. And then number six is Solo, A Star Wars Story, where they put those on hold.
Yeah.
They're not going to do any more of the Star Wars stories. Those are on hold.
Yeah, at least not for a little while. I think that they're going to focus all their energy on Episode 9, mm-hmm. and when the grosses are through the roof for that, people will see where the hunger for Star Wars is going to be after that.
Right.
I think it's probably best. I think that they should focus all their energy and let Rian Johnson do what he's going to do with his
right.
trilogy now. If nothing else, just to upset all of the Kylo Rens out there who are upset with him.
Yeah,
over it.
Yeah.
You saw the story this week that those fanboys are going to remake The Last Jedi, right?
No, I didn't see that.
You didn't see this?
No.
They put out an announcement, these morons, that they're seeking budgetary donations so they can remake The Last Jedi properly.
Come on, man. Come on.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Don't you almost want to see that?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Like, it's almost like it's a can't-lose proposition for us.
Right.
Because if they don't get it made and it just fails spectacularly, that's a win.
Yeah.
And if they make it, it's going to be the greatest movie since The Room.
Right. Right. So Solo is only at $202 million, which is considered a failure, I would imagine.
Yeah, $353 million worldwide. You know, that's not what you want to see out of a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, that's too bad because it's good.
It is.
It's good. Number seven, Hereditary with 3.8 million. Its total is 35 million. What are we looking at there?
This is a success.
Yeah.
A24, put all their eggs in a basket in this movie. Again, a small budgeted movie. They've probably spent a lot on marketing, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
But $35 million movie. It's one of their highest. I mean, Lady Bird is their highest grossing film to
right.
date, and that was $48 million.
Right.
So this movie is going to come close to that, and it's made a little bit overseas so far. So it's about almost $50 million worldwide.
Yeah.
It's not bad for a movie like this.
Yeah. Okay. Number eight is Superfly, 3.3 million, 15 million in 2 weeks. Not well, not good.
No, this is a bust. This is a why moment.
Yeah. Number nine, it just won't stop. Avengers Infinity War, $2.4 million, $669 million just in America.
Yeah, $2.03 billion worldwide.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think? The next one's got to be like, it's got to go through the roof.
It's got to go. It's got to be higher. I think anything less than one Infinity War would be considered a disappointment because everybody's going to want to see what happens,
yeah.
And it's just the conclusion of it.
I'm just excited about Brie Larson. That's quite frankly.
We're going to get that movie before then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we get that movie before Infinity War 2 or whatever it's going to be called.
Okay. All right, and number 10, this is nice. Won't You Be My Neighbor, in the top 10, a documentary about Mr. Rogers is in the top 10 during the summer.
Gee, I wonder what's going on in the world that a documentary about Mr. Rogers can break into the top 10 not long after a documentary about Ruth Bader Ginsburg spends a couple weeks in the top 10.
Yeah.
I can't think of a documentary that I want to see succeed in these times, and it really is kind of the perfect movie right now. It's a reminder of what we want to be, and what we want our kids to be, for God's sake.
Well, I think that's the message right there. The fact that this thing is in the top 10, it speaks volumes, I think.
Yeah, $4 million. I mean, it's up to $4 million for, a documentary by Focus. And, I hope that finds a way to stay in there for next week, too.
Yeah. Number 11 on the list is Book Club, which is $64.6 million. That is a big hit.
Yeah, that's an absolutely solid hit for Paramount. They've had a little turn of good fortune this year after A Quiet Place and this.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that they're figuring out what Book Club 2 is going to be. Probably all about 50 Shades Darker or whatever.
Right. Yeah, they'll be reading the sequel.
Yeah.
Okay. So next week, what are we looking at? Is Sicario going to be number one?
No.
No,
I don't know. I think Sicario will be number three.
Okay,
at best. Yeah, I mean, because Jurassic World and Incredibles 2 are going to be 1 and 2 mm-hmm. again, without question. So Ocean's 8 was down to 11.6 this weekend. That'll drop. Sicario will get into the top spot. I'm only thinking about 13 to 15 million.
For Sicario?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what the
first... I know there are people are fans of that movie. I still can't believe that it's actually a sequel to that, because it didn't do particularly great.
Yeah, I was just going to say, how much did the... Because when I found out that they were doing a sequel to Sicario, I was happy because I actually really like Sicario.
Sure. That movie has fans. The movie definitely has fans. And I think it did like 44, 48 million, something like that.
Yeah.
And it was well budgeted, so I think it lost money on top of it. But somehow they got a sequel made to it. I don't think it was... You know, it's not like Hell or High Water, which really kind of built an audience and, you know, became even a bigger hit on video, I think.
Right.
I don't know how well this thing did on video. But now it's, you know, it's not a, you know, a thoughtful thriller about the drug trade. It's an action movie.
Right, exactly.
So, and, you know, Josh Brolin's having a good summer. I'll give him that much.
He is. Unbelievable. Well, all right, so we're looking at Jurassic World and Incredibles vying for the top spot again next week.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. Well, we'll talk to you next week, Eric.
Sounds good.
All right, buddy, take care. There you go.
Thanks.
Eric Childress, everybody. We're going to take a quick break here on 720 WGN.